Calling 824-1314 in the matter of the application of Jesus Adrian Soto for a change of name of minor.
And good morning. The panel was previously introduced. Each of you has 15 minutes to state your case in chief. 5 minutes is reserved to appellate counsel if you choose to utilize that. And when you're ready to proceed, appellate counsel, you have the floor.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am having trouble hearing the court just a little bit, but I assume that a thumbs up, I am to proceed and can be heard. Thank you, Judge. My name is Bill Wettering. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner in this case, appealing from a second decision of the same court regarding the issue of a name of a minor child. And I think this to me is a rather simple matter, but apparently it's not to many others. The status of this would be, or the review of this would be de novo, I believe. And I believe that if the court takes a step back and tries to look at this a little more globally, maybe it would be helpful, and I'd like to do that.
You talk about the Saxton factors, and in my concern is this, is in terms of the court order, analyzing the Saxton factors, the trial judge in this says we're neutral. I mean, at what point do the Saxton factors fall towards the name change? So I'd like you to expand on that. I don't think you argued that fully in connection with your briefing, Mr. Wettering.
I thought that we argued it. We referred to specific areas of the court's order and memorandum, and the lack that it had for support. I mean, the court, there isn't a case that you can find on appeal that would have these little facts in support of a name change that has ever been affirmed. And in fact, the name changes have, in all of these cases, have been denied, with most of them with facts less than this, or greater than this, for in support of a name change. Even the Foster case that is most recent and being relied upon, the parties were married at the time the child was born, and the child was 2 years old. So there isn't a case that comes close to this case, insofar as a lack of evidence supporting what the court found in Robinson was a clear and compelling facts that a substantial welfare of the child necessitates the change. And here's the distinction. One could find that a name change is in the best interest of the child in a case such as this, and not find that it's clear and compelling evidence to change the name. And that is where I think everyone gets lost on this. You have a mother born, a mother that bears a child out of wedlock. The child is nearly 5 years old. Before the father brings an action for custody or parenting time, the child has lived exclusively with the mother all of those over 4 years. And the father comes in and says, I want his name changed because of my heritage and because that's what I want. And I think he's going to, he might come under some criticism or something, have problems with his name when he gets in sports and people, he might be embarrassed by not having his father's name. That is not clear and compelling evidence under any case that we've had. It's very lacking. And Judge, it ignores the compelling, the deference that's given to the name at birth that the courts have always said exists. And that, to me, is the difference here. It seems to me that the appellant respondent wants to say, if the court says it's compelling, then it's compelling. And I believe that the job of the Court of Appeals is to say, look, a preference of the parent and of one parent and the parents and the grandparents is not clear and compelling evidence necessitating a change. How is that clear and compelling evidence necessitating a change? In some of these cases, you've had experts testify. You know, in Robinson, these parties were married.
They had
a divorce. The mother wanted to add her name.
Mr. Wettering, I do have a question for you. I'm wondering if the record reflects, I want to make sure I understand the record correctly, first of all. Does the record reflect that mom and child live in Mankato?
Yes.
Okay. And the family grocery store, is that in Mankato or is that in Worthington?
They had a store in Worthington, and now they have a store in St. James or Medelia, one of those two cities.
Okay. And does the record reflect at all how much time child spends in Worthington or Medelia?
The child is in the primary physical custody of the mother and had, and of course, was under statute for the first whatever years of the child's life until this case was brought. It was resolved on stipulation and that primary physical custody would remain. So it would be in that 25% category of time that the child would be with the father. Sometimes a child is with the father, according to the trial court record, sometimes, and the father had been living with the parents. And as far as the facts of this case are that the child resided with his parents and he had another child subsequent to this child.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to understand in terms of these Saxton factors that we're looking at. I mean, it talks about, difficulties, harassment, embarrassment of having the name or not having the name. That's factor two, from what I can tell. And the reputation of the name is separated out from that as a separate factor, the last factor. And so I guess I'm just trying to understand, you know, sort of if we have somebody who's living in multiple areas and maybe this has a reputation in one area, but not another, I don't know to what extent that changes the analysis.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to me, if I just go through the factors, the time, the court said the time was neutral, even though the child had been all the time, there was no marriage, the people weren't living together when the child was born, and the court found that as neutral. I, for the life of me, can't figure that out. The potential harassment found as zero. I think my client, the mother, has no particular issue with the fellow and didn't really say that there was a particular problem with potential for harassment. So that was neutral. The preference of the child was too young. So that was neutral. The effect on the relationship, the court found for the father testified that his son's name had no effect on his relationship with the child. He loves the child and they have a good relationship. And that's the way it is. And then this community respect they found in favor of the father, which seems to me you'd have to somehow find that the mother's respect for the mother's name was somehow in question. And that was never the case here. So that, if anything, should be neutral. So you can't really get to a place where you have clear and convincing evidence that it's, boy, you know what, Judge? It's necessary that this child's name be changed. So just to go on, the only thing you have is foster, where the parties were married when the child was born and the child was 2 years old when the parent requested a joint name. And so this case doesn't revolve around anything to do with any factor that would make it compelling and necessary. It's hard for me to understand then how you would have a case where a court couldn't or wouldn't just change the name if everything, well, it doesn't really make that much difference. It's a hyphenated name and the father wants it. So, okay, where you've denied it, where a mother wants it who gets divorced And she's got her maiden name back, and she wants to put her maiden name with her husband, the father's name. And the court says, no, we're not going to do that. Here's the situation. So it seems to me that you have to be able to recognize that one party can want something, but unless there's a clear and compelling reason to necessitating that change, that the given name stands. And
does it make a difference that he petitioned only to add Soto to create a hyphenated last name of Soto hyphen Redorn, as opposed to completely replacing the last name?
I don't think it makes, honestly, under the law, I don't think it matters. These hyphenated names, and that's what was trying to be done in Robinson, was a hyphenated name instead of changing the name. And the courts are saying that there has to be some deference given to the given name. And he was on as a signed an acknowledgement of parentage at that time. The child proceeded with that name. She had full custody under the Minnesota statute of a single woman bearing a child, and she had full responsibility for that child. And so that's, I don't think the hyphenation makes any difference. And what would be the compelling reason for the hyphenation that necessitates a change? This is where I want to hone in on. The court saying it's compelling and clear, you really can't find that in the factual determinations that were made in the case, as far as I can tell. And it's nothing more to me than a run of the mill. I would prefer the child have my name. I think that when he gets older, he may, kids may ask him, why his name isn't the same as his father's or something like that. I don't think that is a compelling reason necessitating the change. And again, the court, I criticized the court in the first case that we had on this for misstating the law. And I still think that that's basically the case. I mean, you don't just grant the name. If both parents agree and there's no sort of fraud going on, you change the name. I get that. But if they don't agree, then you have to have a pretty darn good reason.
As I understand it, the reason that the court ultimately found was that there was a cultural connection, that there was a reason to want to recognize the Hispanic aspect of his heritage. Is that not enough?
I don't think that's enough. I mean,
the law, why is it not enough?
My mother's Irish and my father's Dutch. I mean, you have certain traditions. That tradition was followed at the time. And judge, really, I mean, think about this. The name was given at the time of birth. The law was that the mother had custody of the child. The name wasn't given to the child to discriminate against the father's heritage. That's his name. And I think that we need to set that aside here. And the way I understand the law and perceive the law, if a fellow came in and told me, look, I have these facts and I would like the child to have my name, I would say, let's do the best we can to get the mother to agree to that. But I don't think under the law, you're entitled to it. That's what I think the result of this case should be. And there is no cultural discrimination in this woman's attitude toward this fellow. So she believes that Adrian loves his boy. She believes that Adrian, she thought at the time, was a good guy. They split up, but it's not a personal thing against him or his family. And in fact,
I
You
should be
know,
clear.
she had.
I don't see it as any anything about. I don't see anything in the record about discrimination. I think it was more of this is an opportunity to acknowledge it, and that was as I read the court order on the last page in particular. That's kind of where I was keying in on. But I understand your argument to be that that is just simply not enough to equate to a compelling reason. Clear and compelling.
Yes, I think that's it. I don't think we should put him in a different category than any other man.
Mr.
He should
Weiland,
be the treated the same.
your time has expired. I understand from our host that all of the judge participants are having some kind of a Our voices are a little garbled. We can hear you very well. So at this time, I'll turn it
Thank you.
over to Mr. Burkholz, representing the responding party.
May it please the court, counsel, Attorney Jacob Burkholz representing petitioner and respondent Jesus Soto. The reverse and remand had to do with making the appropriate findings, and the district court made those findings. I don't hear any objection on appeal that the necessary findings were improperly made or inadequately made, or that the law was inadequately followed. I would take note from a legal position that the suggestion was a standard of review was de novo, in re CMG, which is 516 Northwest 2nd, 555, 1994, references an abuse of discretion standard. And I think that's important that this is likely reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard when we're dealing with the findings and not the application of the law. And I think the primary argument that it appears is that the evidence as a whole is suggested to be insufficient to support the name change. The primary argument of appellant, which is an inadequate standard on review, which is appellant seeks this court to reweigh the evidence, change the balancing. And I think that's the suggestion that opposing counsel makes is that this court should supplant its opinion of culture and supplant its opinion of the appropriateness of what the parents want and et cetera for what's this court found to be substantial and compelling. And so, yes, the court does make some suggestions that two of the three of the factors are neutral. I think the first three, but factors four and five are weighty, and there's nothing that suggests that one particular factor can be significantly more weighty or have a compelling effect on multiple factors. And I think that's what ended up happening here is the court found that some of the primary factors, including the very strong cultural and family relations of the child, I think there's actually more findings in the record that could be made. I didn't go into it, but if this court makes a thorough review, would find that all of those factors, including, you know, family ties, the relationship with the culture. Yes.
Mr. Burkholz, my concern here is as follows. The standard is to be the evidence must be clear and compelling that the substantial welfare of the child necessitates such change. And I take those words at face value. Compelling, I think, is a lot more than it sounds like it's a good idea, for example. And necessitates such change means that it's necessary. As I look at the factors here, I think four of them were essentially found to be neutral. And the one that you seem to be hanging your hat on, and I think perhaps the district court did as well, was the final one about name your reputation and the cultural connection. And when we're looking at a test and we're weighing five different factors and only one of them leans slightly in one way as opposed to being neutral, how is that enough to get us to clear and compelling necessitating a change?
I would acknowledge that the case law and how and why there was even a reverse remand in this case, is it the best interests factors that need to support it, as Robinson said, in many of the unpublished cases. I don't see any case that removes the Robinson standard of best interests, that the best interests are the primary factor. And so if essentially we're kind of overturning Robinson and saying, well, actually the standard isn't primarily the best interest, we're saying it's best interests and substantial and compelling and necessary, well, then what's the standard? So if we say, well, it is in the child's best interest, and that's what's required, and that's what's met, because that's what the remand order states in the order opinion. I think page from Judge Jennifer Frisch, factor paragraph 8, right, that first a district court must exclude, find that the Saxton factors is in the best interest of the child. Second, the district court must determine whether a parent opposing the name change established that it is not clear and compelling. So, you know, if this court were to essentially change that standard and saying, well, now it's actually the second factor is on the now on the petitioning parent, because that's not what the remand order says. The remand order makes it very clear that that burden is on Mr. Wettering's client, and that the mother has to establish, because she's opposing it, that the evidence supporting the name change, which there is, and I think the best interest factors support it, is not clear and compelling that the child's substantial welfare necessitates the change. So as I read the remand order and case law, that burden is on Mr. Wettering's client, and he hasn't met that burden and didn't meet that burden to the trial court. And I think it would be petitionable to the Supreme Court if we were to change the remand order, change Foster and Robinson and Saxton to say that now there's a triple burden, or maybe one and a half, two and a half, which is that the petitioning party, Mr. Soto, has to prove the best interest factors, and then he has to then prove clear and compelling and necessitating a change that would be different. And I think that's Mr. Wettering's primary argument. I know I try to help Bill out as much as I can, but if those three factors, you know, did he meet all those factors? Now, I think he would anyway, but again, that's not the standard, and that's not what Judge Weeks found, is that the best interest factors do support a change, and that's the Saxton factors. And so, again, going back to those, and it's actually factor 3, 1, 2, and 3 are neutral, and 4 and 5 in the name change order on remand are very clearly in support of the factors. So if 2 of the 3 are substantial, and 3 are neutral, I still think that is meets the burden. And the burden in this case, again, is probably just best interest and a preponderance of standard. We're still in a civil proceeding, and a civil proceeding is preponderance. And if 2 out of 5 are positive and 3 are neutral, then we're still significantly positive, meaning much more than 50%, and the preponderance standard would be met. If we're suggesting that this entire standard of review isn't really de novo, or excuse me, isn't abuse of discretion, but is now a clear and convincing standard, I still think that the record would support that. There's no case law that suggests it's now a clear and convincing. Now, it's tempting to suggest that now we have a compelling standard, that that's the same as clear and convincing on behalf of the petitioning party, Mr. Soto. I don't believe it is. I think it's a very fairly easy analysis across the board, which is 5 factors. Does it meet the best interests of the child? Are those factors in support? Yes, they are. Does the opposing party have evidence to show that it should not be granted? And in this case, there isn't really any evidence supported by Ms. Verdun. In fact, I would suggest that if the court were to review the findings that Mr. Wettering's client, that mother, Ms. Verdun, says that there's no reason to keep Verdun.
So I agree with you that we're applying an abuse of discretion standard. Uh-huh. And I had also have right here the order opinion that Judge Frisch at the time, now Chief Judge Frisch, issued. And it lays out this 2-step process. So first, the district court must consider non-exclusive Saxton factors to determine whether the parent requesting the name change established that this was in the child's best interest. But second, the district court must determine whether the parent opposing the name change, here mom, established that the evidence supporting the name change is not clear and compelling, that the child's substantial welfare necessitated such a change. And my understanding is the district court didn't reopen the record. So we're left with the evidence that was placed on the record in the initial start of these proceedings. And I think mom's argument is there's just not enough here. There was not enough to reach that clear and compelling to and substantial welfare necessitating the change. That's how I understand the argument. Not that there is a third, or that we're now going to impose a third element to this two-step test. So explain to me, you know, how you win under this framework.
Certainly. So the factors, as I as stated, all support the change. So if the primary argument is then, does Mr. Soto have to present evidence that says that this, get the verbiage here correct, that it is not, that it necessitates the change. So there is no, there's no case law, published or unpublished, that that talks about the necessity of the change. I don't think there's any such thing as anything necessitating a change, right? I mean, just speaking abstractly, what would necessitate a change? Under Mr. Wettering's framework, we'd have to flip the standard to be that that circumstances are so bad that the child is being bullied and belittled for their name that we have to do this for the child's safety or concern. That's just not the standard. And so what we have is positive factors, which is most of the requests that are made, is that the child would benefit by having these changes. And therefore, then we say, well, that substantial welfare necessitates a change. But speaking again to what's in the record, what is the welfare of the child? And there's no, again, no clear guidance to say what substantial welfare means. But I would suggest that if the interpretation of the best interest factors are inferred, then we know that the child's family, culture, and relationships of the child, which each one of the family members would be supported. And that is a significant factor. So it's, again, non-exhaustive, and it doesn't require one, two, three, or five factors to show that that substantial welfare. I think what Mr. Wettering's implication is that substantial welfare means something more than the Saxton factors. It means something more, that there has to be like blatant harassment or something of that nature that doesn't exist. And we would almost never have a name change granted, I would submit, if we would provide this heightened factor where we would have only parents of criminals would, and situations of great prejudice to a party. What we typically have, and in this case, and I understand these cases are close calls and under abuse of discretion, but there really, again, isn't anything to show that the child, in this case, that it isn't anything but clear and compelling. The court found it clear and compelling. Again, we shouldn't reweigh that. But what is clear, that the child's relationship would benefit, and it wouldn't be detrimental. So if we looked at this from a non-exhaustive standpoint, and I think what's important, because this is the burden, we're taking, what are the factors that show that mother isn't prejudiced or that mother didn't meet her burden? And I think we can do that, as the court mentioned, by showing her name wasn't removed. Some of the unpublished cases focus on that, that we're not seeking to exclude. I think that's In Re Lowe, 2011, Westlaw, from an unpublished standpoint, 2750729. And when we're looking at other cases that have affirmed under similar circumstances, the end of the analysis says, well, in this case, Ms. Verdorn can't show that the child would be hurt by having a hyphenated name. Her name would not be excluded, that the child's age and his writing would be easily added by adding that name, that there'd be nothing in the community that would eliminate either party, that there was nothing shown by mother that anything in the community, really either community, Mankato or Worthington, suggests that anyone knows about this disorderly conduct charge that existed, that we litigated in family court. So there's nothing in the record that shows that the child's name, if granted, would prejudice or harm the child or mother. And then if the court goes on to add in extra factors, again, Saxton's non-exclusive. So then the other factors are that Verdorn doesn't have a significant impact to the child because of mother's rocky relationship with her father, and that her own maternal grandparent is not Verdorn. And so we essentially have the majority of the family, including in the entire paternal side, and all the close people. And this court should take a close look at the actual trial record. Ms. Verdorn didn't bring any of her family members to testify. So if we're looking at it under the abuse of discretion standpoint, no one came to testify in support of mother. And we had a significant number of witnesses for father testifying as to the significant impact. So again, we shouldn't be re-weighing that, but just from the sheer volume of evidence that exists within the record, we can show that nothing was harmed to the child. And again, I appreciate Mr. Wettering saying, well, once we set it, we should never change it, but for some extreme grave circumstance. And I don't think that's what Robinson or Saxton or the remand order in this case submits. This court should review under that lens. And even if Mr. Wettering is right, he can't articulate a standard by which this court should apply. There's no clear standard then. We would have some heightened standard that would be, and let's hear from it. I'd like to hear what Mr. Wettering has to say of what his new standard would be under when a name change would be granted. I see I'm about out of time.
Thank you for your comments. And Mr. Wettering, you have the last word.
Thank you, Judge. Well done, Jacob. I would say that the opposite is true of what the counsel is saying. He's suggesting that there really isn't a standard, that you don't have to have compelling, clear and compelling evidence to change the name, and that the evidence stands for itself. These folks say, this is what we want. We want the name changed. Even so, disregard the duration of the time. Disregard that neither party, I mean, the court finds that it's in favor of the father. Name familiarity or whatever in the community is in favor of the father. That's clearly an abuse of discretion here. There's no evidence of a poor reputation of the name that the child has. The father himself testified it didn't interfere with his relationship with the child. So that was put on
Mr.
the
Wetterling?
Order as
Mr. Wettering, I just want to make sure I understand. So is it your position that you have the burden of showing that the evidence in the support of the name change is not clear and compelling, the substantial welfare of the child necessitates such a change? Is that correct?
No, that's really, I don't really buy into that. How do you?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't really care whether you buy into it or not. That's what the law says. So if that's what the law says, is it your position then that because only two of the factors that the district court relied on to support the name change, that your client feels that those two factors do not make it clear and compelling that the substantial welfare of the child necessitates the change? Is that your position? Because three are
that's
not
one of my
and two
that's
and
one
two
of my
are,
positions, Judge.
Now, would you agree that, you know, as to the fourth and the parent relationship and the name reputation, you're saying that that the testimony of the father was equivocal, that the child may that his testimony was equivocal is that it's going to harm the relationship, and he apparently said no, it doesn't really matter. So is you're saying that the court got that factor wrong, and that at best it's neutral?
I would agree that that's what the evidence showed.
And then what about the last factor, name reputation? The court felt that Soto would help child in Hispanic circles. Father's family is culturally Hispanic, and the family is known for their grocery store business. Now, there is evidence on the other way of the disorderly conduct, but we don't get to reweigh the evidence. The court sort of found that that outweighs whatever the disorderly conduct. So is it your position now that really if four of the factors are neutral and it's only the last one, that's not enough. Was that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. I would go further, but that's a fair statement.
So then your argument is that we should just simply reverse it outright because applying those factors within the rubric of the best interest factors, the case hasn't been made.
Yes, I believe that's overall true, and those are also non, you know, they are not exclusive factors either. But what counsel's doing here is totally excluding all the case law up to now that says that if a child's given a name, that there has to be clear and compelling reasons that necessitate the changing of the child's name. And he's asking me, you know, well, what do I say the standard is? If you don't hold the proponent of the name change to providing clear and compelling evidence necessitating the change, what do I have to say in reply to their failure to do that? How is the burden on the mother who bore this child, raised the child to the age until this action was brought, and the courts up until now have said, look, that's going to be left alone. I mean, you have in Robinson, the woman who bore the child during the marriage, and then
Mr. Wettering, your time has expired.
It was kind of consumed, Judge.
We understand the arguments. We understand the briefing. The matters are being submitted, and a decision will be issued by this court within the statutory time frame. I can tell both attorneys are passionate about this issue. Thank you for appearing by remote capacity. And this court will now stand in adjournment.
Thank you.